This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, here we go. Final hour of the show. 60 minutes on the clock. We take you till 4. Blitz takes you till 7. I'm sure there's going to be plenty of hot takes on the breaking news today as Fred, AJ, and Aaron take you all the way until
what breaking news?
7 o'clock. About? Well, I mean, I'll leave it up to them. I'm sure they'll cover the news of the day and anything that's pressing and breaking in the world of sports, as we have done. And we've covered a lot of ground. We just got into a little bit of the Texans in talking about just how important that game is on Thursday Night Football. So that'll be interesting. I know one thing you wanted to get into that you pointed out to me, and then you alluded to it in the show, so we might as well get to it. The Melo experiment started last night in Portland.
If it
you
did.
Missed it, Carmelo Anthony finally made his long-awaited debut with the Blazers as they played the Pelicans. I don't know about you, Nick. I watched some of it. I was shocked that a guy that has not been around the team all year started, which leads you to believe differently than what he experienced when he was with the Rockets. The organization basically just succumbed to everything that he wanted because, you know, he does not want to come off the bench. So they start a guy that hasn't been with the team and known anything about the team, the chemistry, the system, anything. He goes 4 of 14. Good news is 2 out of 3 from 3. Bad news is missed a whole hell of a lot of shots other than that. And then, as you wanted to point out, his defense wasn't great either.
Yeah, shocker, right? I think, and the bit, I didn't get the mentality behind that. I don't know what Stotts was thinking.
Yeah.
But having him being a part of the offense like that early, like it was obvious in the game that they were planning on going to Carmelo very soon. Like it was on the very first or second possession. And I just think that's either really smart or really stupid, because I think how you approach Carmelo is always very important. And I don't want you, if I'm a coach, and you consider Melo's situation, what is he, a 35-year-old Melo who's been out a year? You consider his situation. You do not want to feed into his mentality that he's going to be a go-to option that quickly. You can't do it right off the bat. Now, maybe they had a discussion with Carmelo and said, hey, you're going to be a big part of this offense in this game, but don't think that this is what's going to happen going forward. We have an injury situation. We want your veteran experience. I don't think that was said.
I think it was a desperation move. I think it shows that they are just grasping at straws for answers because they started him. And like you said, it wasn't just early in the game. I watched in the fourth quarter when they were able to take a double-digit deficit and turn it into a six-point game. And the next thing you know, McCollum is trying to set Melo up on the low block for a one-on-one post-up in which he settles for a fadeaway, off-balance, not even close jump shot with no one in ready for a rebound. And I'm going, why are you doing this?
I'm glad you brought that up. That's another thing I would eliminate out of his game. Be like, listen, Melo, you can't post up anybody. You're already a much of a ball stopper. You stop the ball as much as you do already without posting up. I don't want Melo posting up on anything. The thing that he showed is basically what he's been able to show basically his entire career. He can shoot and he can perform offensively in basically all three areas, right? Behind three-point line, mid-range, and at the rim. I would eliminate the post discussion with him at
the
rim.
Fair enough, he's an over-the-hill James Harden. Right? Because at his peak, he was a scoring machine. But where he is at his game now is what James Harden could turn into someday because he doesn't play defense.
He's a below-average defender.
But you see what I'm saying? He's at this point in his career, he is an over-the-hill James Harden.
It could be.
Right?
I don't think it's a terrible comparison.
It's not a slap in the face for Harden because Harden's going to have a hell of a career. It's a slap in the face to say that, to your point, you're going to bring in Carmelo Anthony, who hasn't even been near this team and its personnel and its roster, and you're going to start him and expect him to score on the low block in the mid-range and do whatever he wants, and he's going to miss 10 shots out of the 14 that he takes.
Yeah, I don't get what they're doing. Maybe it seems like, obviously, they're going to say, yeah, we thought his debut went fine. Obviously, it's been one game, so they're going to say nothing but positive things about him. And the teammates are going to do the exact same thing the Rockets did. No one was really saying anything bad in a Rockets uniform about Carmelo, and they always said, it's not Melo's fault. It's not Melo's fault. That's exactly what they said yesterday with the Portland Trailblazers. That's going to sound redundant, though, because the graphic that ESPN put on TV and on Twitter did not do Carmelo Anthony any justice, and it just showed what the offense looked like with him included in it. I'm not want to. I don't want to sit here and poop all over Anthony the entire time. There have been things that he has shown that he can do well. Like I said, he still can shoot the three. He can still shoot the mid-range. You saw him set that screen, do the pick and roll. You can use him in a pick and roll situation.
Nice, Nick, you can't even say that he can shoot the mid-range. He made four. He made four shots. Two of them were threes. One of them was that pick and roll to the basket layup. So he missed 9 of his 10 shots from mid-range.
But we both can say he can shoot the mid-range. It's Russ. That was a Russ situation. He can shoot the mid-range.
Okay, but in the interview, he said he wasn't rusty. He felt great. Okay. But I get what you're saying. You got to play up to NBA speed.
Well,
right?
It'll be interesting to see if he's not even able to shoot the mid-range, then what are we using Carmelo Anthony for? Like, if he can't even do that at this point, he's not going to become a good defender. He's a below average defender. That ship has sailed. That's not changing. You know what you're going to get. That's the reason why it's tough for me as a spectator saying, like, if I'm the front office of any NBA team, if I'm the coach, you should know that going into this when Carmelo Anthony comes to your team. You're only going to get this much defense out of him. So you know going in that that's how much of a liability he's going to bring to the table.
Well, that's what I'm saying, on defense, at this point,
why would you give him why would you give him all those minutes? Why?
I'm saying it reeks of desperation. If you're Portland, a team we talked about before the season started, of saying when Nurkic gets back, with the fact that you have one of the best scoring backcourts in the league, when you have added some of the young pieces that they've added to enhance that ball club, that they should be a top four team, top five team in the West. Instead, because you get off to a slow start, i.e. Rockets a year ago, you can still dig your way out. It's early in the season, but instead, this move reeks of desperation. And instead of kind of keeping their head above water till they get healthy and they could be the team that they think they can be, this may shoot you in the foot more than it boosts you in the pants because of the fact that he is such a ball stopper and a ball hog and a mass shooter.
Yeah, I mean, non-guaranteed contract. If it's that much of an issue, you can move on from him. We'll see how the Trailblazers look at him in a few games. It's going to be interesting to see.
I don't think it ends well. I don't think. I think this bails Daryl Morey out to some degree because I think at the end of the day, it's going to end similar to the way it ended in Houston, similar to the way it ended in Oklahoma City. In the fact that you got a guy hanging on for dear life that still wants to be treated and get the ball and the touches and the starts that he got when he was at his peak, and he's not going to get it.
My favorite part about that whole situation is watching him quarterback the defense and then miss his assignment.
That's just,
literally telling his teammates, hey, you need to get this guy. You need to get this guy. Oh, I forgot to get my guy. He's wide open. And the three-point shot goes in. My bad. My bad. And I just don't see him. I don't see how that's going to work.
No, I'm with you. And the fact that, like you said, it just reeks of desperation to me. So I don't get it, but we'll see. It's also going to be interesting when Dame comes back. And now you got McCollum and Lillard getting up the shots they need to get
those
up.
Those are the leaders, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Dame
better
is
be.
I mean,
they damn well better be. But that's why I'm saying it's going to probably not end well because Melo's going to and his ego is going to get involved, and that's where it's all going to go haywire. If nothing else, this is a huge feather in the cap of the Rockets and Daryl Morey because they won't look as bad if this ends the way it ended in Houston.
He seemed very surprised that he got the call. So he should be all over this opportunity.
All right, we'll see how that goes. All right, so we can continue to talk about other things. We got callers that want to talk about a little bit more about the Texans. We've got lots of things that we can get to. And also, if there's something on your mind you want to get off your chest, join us, 713-780-3776. Text that number. Call that number. It's the HRNP listener line, or hit us up on Twitter. Nick and I are here along with Tyler. We are the usual suspects, ESPN 97.5.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
We're rolling through the final hour of the show. It's The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. It's Nick in for Barry. It's Tyler in for Nick. And me just being me as we take you through the day on a way back Wednesday. Songs pre-2009 about fighting, conflict, all of that.
Combat, battle.
Who's getting credit for hour number three?
That would be Barry. Barry Lambert.
Does he get credit for it, or does Tyler get it, or you, or who selected the list?
Barry gets, I mean, I threw in a bunch of songs, so we
can. He had 10 or 11 on his list, so.
Okay. Yeah. Full I mean,
Barry.
Barry did one? I put together a bunch, and we added it, and we
you
made
collaborated?
It Barry's list. Yeah, we collaborated. That's the right word. There you go. Done.
All right. T.Y. Hilton, one of the listeners, points out, full participant for the Colts today. Of course he was, because he sees and he's salivating about the fact that he sees the Texans on the schedule, and he goes, yep, I got to play that game because I'm going to make the Pro Bowl. So with that being said, Philip wants to get in here, talk a little bit about Bill O'Brien. Philip, what's up? Philip, you're on. Go. Philip!
He's listening on.
Hey.
Go,
buddy.
How
you doing?
What's up, man? How you doing?
Hello?
Yeah, you're on, Philip. Go.
Hang up on
him. Yeah, it is Philip.
Hang up on him. Hang up on him. I don't want to. He's on a delay. Philip. I don't want to talk about
that. That was not.
When they're on that much of a delay, I don't even want to talk.
I will ask you guys. I did a sports map video with the boys, and we were talking about in the history of Houston sports, and I hate using the term that they wanted to use, but we used it, Mount Rushmore. But if you were going to say the four most hated guys in the history of Houston sports, who would you say? Because I said, look, number one is, always will be, in my estimation, Bud Adams, because he took football from the football-heavy state and city that loved football simply because of a stadium dispute. So I put Bud Adams as one.
I think that's a fair, especially for the, I hate to say it, but older generation.
Right? They're never going to forget that.
Never.
Because their love you blue went out the door.
Never.
Right? Pujols, because they hated the rivalry with the Cardinals, the fact that he hit that ball off a ledge so hard it should have gone through the window.
So we're not talking necessarily like Houston athletes, non-Houston athletes.
Just in the history of Houston sports lores, all the major sports, all of what's gone down in the world of sports in Houston, who would you say are the four or five most hated guys? Whether it be an owner for your team, in the case of Bud Adams, a player against your team like a Pujols or a Stockton who beat them with a chance to go to the finals with that shot.
What about a league commissioner?
Quite possible, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, what about Mike Fiers, Tyler? What about Mike Fiers? Does he suddenly make that list? Because without Mike Fiers, you might not have all this controversy and the Astros might not be the asterisk. What about Peyton Manning? A guy that's so beloved because of his marketing and his personality and all the things he did, but he ripped your heart out and prevented you from winning the division and making the playoffs. How many years?
That's probably a good one. I don't know. I'm trying to think of, I mean, I was going to say Pat Bev or like a Ron Artest or something like that, but I don't see them as being absolutely
But they were
hated.
Once members of your team, so you're exactly. not going to hate them too much, right? Pat Bev, as we always said, beloved when he's a member of your team, hated when he's not, but he gave you a lot when he was here. So I don't think people are going to like hold a long-term grudge against him.
Brock Osweiler?
I mentioned that. The guys were like, they said no for the top four or five, but I said, look, it wasn't his fault that he got signed, but it was his fault how badly he played to never live up to the billing. And then you had to give up draft picks to get rid of him and that contract so that you could give up more draft picks to get the quarterback that he was supposed to be.
Yeah, I would say he's up there. I would agree with that. He's probably not up there in terms of being the top five. I'm trying to think of who else would be a better example. I mean, there's been a bunch of players, I think, like against the Rockets, against the Astros, and against the Texans that have absolutely owned them in terms of, like, in-game play.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to think
Anybody
of
come to mind, Tyler, that we might have missed?
I mean, back in the day, I hated Seattle.
I mean, a lot of people, well, yeah, that.
But yeah, you could say Gary
I remember
Payton
back in the day, like, through the championship run, a lot of people just hated David Stern because they thought that he was out to get the Rockets.
Okay.
I don't know if he was. Yeah, I mean he's not as hated as Roger Goodell, but there's definitely some people out there that absolutely hate David Stern for sure.
I think
Goodell's more like the Patriots hate Goodell.
I think David Stern may go down as the greatest single commissioner in any of our lifetime.
Wow.
The way he handled everything from his sport, his teams, even when a franchise was... And honestly, this move saved Daryl Morey's ass. But when he was pseudo-running the Pelicans, the New Orleans franchise at the time, and he vetoed the three-way trade in which Chris Paul would have been a Laker, Daryl Morey would have given up every asset he had, and you would have been building around Pau Gasol. You don't make the Harden trade if he doesn't veto that trade. He saved, in a lot of ways, indirectly, he saved the Rockets franchise.
Here's one from the text line. How about Jim Kelly and the Buffalo Bills?
Possible, right?
Is he hated?
Is Frank Reich hated because he was part of the whole 35-3?
But we can't get over that Oilers thing.
Is that Frank Reich's fault, or is that the Oilers' fault?
I guess it's harder to admit it was the Oilers' fault, I guess.
Do you hate the officials that screwed you in the Renfro game with the Oilers and the Steelers back in the day?
They absolutely hate those officials.
That's another possibility. Do you hate Valvano and the NC State Wolfpack because their Cinderella story was your upset never to be outdone with Phi Slamma Jamma, Guy V. Lewis, and the Cougs?
That's another good one. We're getting some more on the text line. Braves, Carl Malone in the past.
Yeah.
Carlos Boozer, Damian Lillard for a series clincher.
I see Boozer, yep.
David Robinson for steaming Hakeem's second MVP.
He did you a
favor, excuse me.
If he doesn't get that MVP trophy in the playoffs, you don't see that motivated Olajuwon to that level, I don't think. That won you a championship.
We have a text that said Houston Mayor Bob Lanier hated Bud Adams. He ran Bud Adams out of town. Does he get any blame?
He could. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Art Modell and the Cleveland Browns.
Why?
I don't know.
I mean, I see Kobe because Kobe ripped out the hearts of a lot of teams, but Kobe was infamous for just when you thought a game was won. And I was part of a couple of them where he came to Houston and just the Rockets had like a 9 or 10 point lead with less than a minute to play. And he just single-handedly beat you. But don't hate him because he's good. But that's what a lot of these are about. You know, Stockton and Malone were hated because they prevented the Rockets in a lot of ways from reaching their full abilities.
Here's a funny one. Chris Paul's hamstring. That's from the 409.
I like that one.
I thought that was 86 Mets. Why?
Because the 86 Mets eliminated the Astros.
Let's see what else. That's about it. That's all on the text line.
So, not to start bad radio of, you know, top 10 lists and things like that, but that was one we did for Sports Map because the interesting question became, does Mike Fiers make the top four because he basically was the igniter of this entire cheating scandal?
Wait till
the
sanction comes out. Wait till the punishment comes down, and then maybe that will help us dictate how much we hate Mike Fiers.
Okay. All right, so I just thought I'd throw that out there as we get nearing the last half hour portion of the program. That means we'll take you till 4 o'clock. Blitz takes you till 7 before they jet set with Nick on their way to Las Vegas for the rest of the weekend to cover the fight and do some broadcasting. And a little scheduling note for you peeps that we continue to mention for you. One, come on out and see us at Twin Peaks tomorrow as we'll be broadcasting live 1 to 7 p.m. I-10 in Kirkwood. Now's your chance to get a Suspects t-shirt, hang out with Charlie Pelillo, myself, and Raheel. As the lineup's a little bit scrambled tomorrow because the Blitz, being in Vegas, can't make an appearance. They're going to take Pelillo's spot 11-1. Charlie's going to take our spot 1-4. We're going to take the Blitz's spot, Raheel and myself, 4-7. So stop out and see us. The marketing team's going to be there. Obviously, the Twin Peaks girls are going to be there, and everything that Twin Peaks has to offer, from the made-from-scratch menu items to the 29-degree draft beer, and we'll make a day of it. But that's going to be the scrambled lineup tomorrow for ESPN. And then Friday, everything goes back to normal, and Josh Jordan from Moneyline on Sundays is going to do the show with me while you guys are away.
Sounds like a plan. I am looking forward to the Vegas trip. I do find it interesting though that you're going to do this on the road. So I don't know if we're going to do Sigmund Bloom tomorrow, are we?
I don't know. I mean, the thing is not only is it tomorrow and most everybody's gone, but also the fact that we're doing the Blitz 4-7. We'll have to see if it works in his schedule.
Okay.
Yeah, so we'll find that out. Otherwise, we can probably do it on Friday when we're back in the studio. And Josh is also a fantasy football expert, so we can fill it that way. All right, half hour to go when we come back. Don't go anywhere. It's the final 30 minutes of The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, 30 minutes on the clock. It's the final half hour of The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. Appreciate you taking us along for the ride. Wherever you may be in the big city on this way back Wednesday, songs pre-2009 that had to do with fighting because Nick and the Blitz and Booker T and Brad and Jerry Bo are all going to Vegas to cover the fight. So Nick picked the topic. He picked his list first. Kudos to him. And we did it accordingly. It's also the portion of the program that we remind you that we've covered a lot of ground with Nick in for Barry. If you missed any portions of the program, ESPN975.com. You click on the show tab at the top of the page. You can catch up on the hours you missed. While you're there on the front page, it'll teach you how to download the app. Therefore, you take us anywhere, everywhere, listen to us, wherever you may be, not only just in Houston or in Texas, but across the country, because we constantly get tweets and texts to say, I'm listening in Colorado, I'm listening in Iowa, I'm listening wherever you may be. We appreciate you. So we've talked about a lot of things. Rockets and the Nuggets tonight in the Mile High City. We will talk about more, as we talked about today, the Texans getting ready to host the biggest game of the year for them against the Colts on Thursday Night Football at NRG. So we've got that on the table. We talked about the LeBron love for MVP this season and how everybody thinks it's just his hands down with the way Harden's been playing. He's not getting enough love. And a lot of other topics. So hopefully you've had a lot of fun along the way. It's kept you entertained. And if there's something in the last half hour you want to get to us, 713-780-3776, call or text, hit us on Twitter. We'll get to it if we can. So with that, Nicholas, anything else on your agenda of things that you want to cover today?
Man, I just, in terms of covering, did you see Grant? I thought it was kind of funny, but did you see Gronkowski at the Lakers game?
Yeah.
Performing with the cheerleader, the Laker girls,
and
I guess.
They had some kind of celebrity deal with the Laker girls last night where Serena Williams did a routine.
She was on the court. She even grabbed some, I wouldn't say random, but there was somebody that was on the court. And it was kind of funny. I thought it's cool it's cool to see celebrities do things like that. I thought it was actually pretty impressive. You can actually see how happy Rob Gronkowski is not being on the field, to be honest with you. I think that stress that he was talking about was genuine. Like, he was really boggled down from all the stress that comes along with being a Patriot, an NFL star, one of the best, if not the best, tight ends on the field. He's just happy out there having fun, and I think that's a good thing, man.
No, and you know what? He had a press conference yesterday to announce that he's going to be hosting a massive Super Bowl party in Miami this year. And the questions then abound because of the fact that if the Patriots make the Super Bowl, the Patriot fans were holding out hope, going, that's awesome, because he's hosting that party anyway, so he might as well play for the Patriots and help them get another championship, and then that's where he can have his post-game celebration. To which he squelched all of it and said, yeah, there's a chance I play football again. It's just not going to be in 2019. He says he does watch the game as much as possible. He's been working as an analyst in the studio with Fox. But that he needed the time away and that he's enjoying himself. And obviously then he goes to the Laker game and does the routine with the Laker girls. And you're like, yeah, I'm sure he is enjoying life right now. So, he and James Corden did another routine aside from the one with Serena. And that's when those, I'll say this, the one thing that when you look at him, he's a big dude, but he has lost so much weight from where he was when he was a tight end and had to be at a weight good enough to block as well as run, that it would take him some time to get back into tight end NFL football shape.
Sure. I mean, he's not incredibly old, but he's not that young. He would have to definitely get back in hitting shape. He would have, there's expectations that the Patriots put on him, and, he was one of the guys that I mean, he's accused of not being the most intelligent person in the world, but he is also been credited for being prepared when he's in that I'm following orders mode. He does really good about getting back in shape. I don't know if you would compare him to someone like a Charles Barkley who does an unbelievable. It was unbelievable how quickly he can get back into shape. But now you're talking about a situation where he's been out of the game and hitting shape is huge.
Right? We've talked about when you step away for any amount of time, and we talked about it with the Kaepernick situation this week. When you're out of the game for 3 years, or in this case, he's going to be out for 1 year at least. It's a more difficult proposition to mentally and physically get yourself to where you were to try and maintain or achieve more than what you did when you were playing the sport day after day after day, every single day. So you look at it. I also thought it was kind of curious that a lot of people were saying, well, he's the greatest tight end to ever play the game. We always talk about this, and we talk about it with everything that we talked about with MVP or Hall of Fame and the criteria. But how do you look past Tony Gonzalez? How do you look past Shannon Sharp? How do you look past some of the greatest tight ends of the game in terms of statistically and otherwise? Or are you just saying, look, in a short sample size, because he really hasn't had that long of a career, the titles and the part of the dynasty of the Patriots elevates him above those other guys?
Yeah, I tend to agree. I mean, a lot of people would say those names. Jason Witten is another one. Yeah. Jimmy Graham. I think he's above all those guys. Tony. I mean,
let me tell you something, Skip. If you're going to tell him he's better than me, Skip, I'm going to have a real problem with you, Skip, because I have the statistics and I won a championship with the Baltimore Ravens, Skip.
He's actually starting to grow on me.
Shannon Sharp. Fantastic numbers, Nick.
Oh, no, in terms of his, when he was playing.
I know you're going to say he's growing as an announcer. I love the fact that he takes counterpoint on Skip on things. But look, it's hard to argue that he, as a body of work, those are the two guys that come to mind in terms of the greatest of all time at tight end. Tony Gonzalez, Shannon Sharp. Tony didn't win a title, but he had the numbers. Shannon Sharp not only won a title, but he had the numbers.
Yeah, I'm with you, especially Tony Gonzalez. I've always been a big fan of Tony Gonzalez. You talk about the longevity and how long he's been, how long he was consistently good as a tight end in that position. I think a lot of people would put that guy's name in the discussion. So
I'll give you a third name, Antonio Gates.
Antonio Gates. I mean, look, Gronkowski, Gates.
And Gronk is in the discussion, right? Because he was a main cog and an unstoppable force with Tom Brady on that Patriots machine. But when you start, again, when you look at the criteria and you start comparing statistics, he hasn't played long enough to be in the category of the guys we mentioned.
Right, right. And maybe that's what happens. But the thing is, like, even if he does make a comeback, I would imagine it's like a one-year deal. Let's test this out. Let's see how good he's going to do after being off all that time. But, yeah, longevity is important. Look, dude, there's people that – Astros fans hate this, but people made the argument that part of the reason why Greg Biggio made it to the Hall of Fame was because of longevity, because the fact that he was able to play as long as he did, and that maybe if his career was cut short, I don't know, 5-6 seasons, that perhaps he wouldn't make the Hall of Fame. I don't necessarily agree with that, but I'm just saying longevity plays a massive role in almost every single sport. Now, if you have longevity and your numbers are just absolutely terrible, no, like, I remember we were talking about Frank Gore. Where is he in all-time rushing? Like,
oh, top five.
Yeah, you can.
How about the fact that a guy like Darren Sproles, top five in yardage all time? Is he a Hall of Famer? And this goes back to the ultimate one that the Rockets fans don't want to get into, but Robert Horry really believes he's a Hall of Famer. Now, if you look at rings, he's up there. If you look at averaging 7 points a game for his career or whatever it was, those aren't Hall of Fame numbers.
I would agree with you, but I can see why he thinks like that, because you know why? Because he was on the court. These guys that you're mentioning, they were on the field. Frank Gore, Darren Sproles, like, I don't know if Darren Sproles will be a Hall of Famer, but he was on the field. There's a longevity factor that always helps you
sure.
when it comes to that discussion.
And that hurts Gronk.
For sure.
I still believe, because of all things involved with the championships, Gronk will be a Hall of Famer someday.
Yes.
Regardless of where his numbers are. Yes. Because you look at Gale Sayers, you look at Barry Sanders, guys who either by choice or by injury cut their career short. If you won and unquestionably were the best at your position during the time that you won, you will get special consideration.
Yeah, I think he'll get in. I don't think that's a question. Now, what's debatable is whether or not he goes down as the best tight end ever. Right. That's debatable. That's whether or not he gets in, for sure, I think he's getting in. No question. Yeah. No doubt in my mind.
Absolutely. All right, so we got one segment to go on the show. We're going to put a bow on it next. Again, we encourage you to stay with us because the Blitz comes up after we do. They'll take you till 7, and all you got to do is keep it tuned right here to ESPN 90. 97.5.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Final segment of the show. Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. Alive and kicking. Live and local. As we wrap this thing up, Nicholas, I know that L.U. Dillon gives you a hard time.
Okay? I know. I saw his text.
Yeah, and we're not going to get into that because I protect you. But I do want to say that to say this, that no matter what L.U. Dillon takes shots at you for, at least you're not 380 pounds. But if you were, you could utilize your belly button in ways that other people could only dream of.
How?
So the story goes, and I know it's shocking, but this happened in Florida. A 380-pound man was hit with felony charges after jail personnel discovered a bag of meth wedged deeply within the belly button cavity of his body.
Now, that I've never heard of. I've heard weird places.
Police responding late Friday to a suspicious person call placed by employees of a McDonald's in Clearwater, Florida, arrested Martin Skelly when a search of the 41-year-old man turned up the loaded needle and everything else in his belly button.
Yeah, it was a small plastic bag containing 2.7 grams of meth, which... That means you have a massive belly button, sir.
It's a pocket, right? Yeah. It's a cavity.
It might have been a like last minute situation, I guess. Maybe he was like, I have no time. Where should I put this? Let me just put this in my belly button. And he had no other place. I don't know.
You think his cell phone's in there too?
Probably.
I mean, it sounds like he's got enough room to make it a fanny pack.
2.7 grams of meth. I don't know what that looks like. I don't know how big that is, but I would imagine. Not meth. Sure. That's crazy, man.
Okay. I was going to say, that's a little bit out of the ordinary. And then, again, we should just do this instead of non-sports. We should just do this as still more effed up things from Florida. Because almost every story we have that's bizarre human being behavior is always from Florida.
9 times out of 10, I feel like.
So with that being said, I say this, a Florida woman allegedly... Let me say this, earmuffs. If you got kids in the car, you're picking them up in the... I'll be a little bit proactive, Barry. Please, and I hate saying this, but change the channel if you got kids in the car. But a Florida woman allegedly bit her boyfriend's penis and threatened him with a knife after she accused him of wanting to have sex with another woman. So he didn't even do it because he had the thought. She decided to take him out at the groin. The alleged assault happened during an hours-long drinking session in Miami Beach that ended at about 3 a.m. Esperanza Gomez was drinking beers with her boyfriend when a female friend joined them at about midnight. The friend left a short time later, but Gomez became enraged and accused her boyfriend of wanting to bed the woman.
It gets better.
She allegedly shouted at him, grabbed him by the arms, and began to poke him with a knife.
It's obvious what she wants to do. She wants to Lorena Bobbitt her boyfriend.
She's got a knife. She's poking him. And then she bites his eggplant out of frustration.
Yeah, if my girlfriend is poking me with a knife, she's no longer my girlfriend. If I even suspect that she has the will or the capability of poking me with a knife, she's not my girlfriend.
You ain't poking her if she's poking you with a knife. Is that what you're saying?
I know what you're saying. I'm just asking
a question. See? Because she was arrested, hit with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon charges.
Of course.
Bond, 6,500 bones.
Deservedly so.
I would agree with that.
I just don't see how she made it to the area without him being able to prevent the whole situation. You get what I'm saying? Before the bite actually happened. Because it said she allegedly bit only because they're not sure if it's true. But it looks like she successfully made it to the groin area. And I think that's impressive by her part. I don't know how you do that. That's quick. I mean, that's speed right there.
If you're a dude, you know any kind of suspicious behavior headed that direction should be cut off at the pass before they even get in the vicinity.
Yeah. I see. That's just not a joke. That whole...
Like, I can see if she's being all provocative and sexy and wanting to get down there and you let it happen and then that happens, then it's not as much on you. But if she already is wielding a knife and she's going to go down for that, I don't think it's going to be getting down in Funky Town. It's going to be, I'm going to say all bets are off and stay away from me.
To the boyfriend's defense, they were drinking. So maybe his reflex will slow down a bit is what I'm saying. I'm not saying it was like I'm trying to give him an excuse.
Either his reflex or her reflux, because maybe it was the gag reflux that caused her to bite down. I'm just throwing it out there.
I'd like to think, regardless of how intoxicated I am, that I'm mobile when it comes to someone trying to attack my groin area. I will run fast.
Now, is this, I would say that this text right here on that very topic would be racially insensitive.
Sure.
281 says, yep, sounds like a Hispanic chick. I got a wife and I wouldn't put it past her to do that exact same thing to me.
So you being married to a Hispanic woman, do you think that's a possibility?
Let's just say that Lisa's no nonsense when it comes to that kind of stuff. So one, I would never do that, obviously, and cheat on my wife or even consider it. I don't think that just based on the innuendo of something going through her head in terms of thoughts where it could go wrong would cause her to wield a knife or do that.
Because she just said that he wanted to.
Yeah, she has no proof of it.
Not that it happened.
Now, all bets are off if Lisa finds out that I was actually betting someone else. Now I would be betting that could happen.
Cut. Yes. Okay, that's different.
Yes.
That's different. I think that's fair.
All right. So those are a little bit off the beaten path for you guys to think about on your drive home. Text messages, we wrap up the show. Someone said, if Tracy McGrady's in the Hall of Fame, I think Ori should be too. Robert Ori ever win a scoring title? No.
But you said you weren't big on Tracy McGrady being a
Hall of Famer. I was not.
But
if you're going to compare the two, look at the scoring averages.
I would
averages.
Put McGrady, yeah, absolutely. It's not even close.
McGrady was a scoring machine. When we talk about guys that are just known as offensive players, like James Harden is because he doesn't play defense as much, that's the knock on him. McGrady and Allen Iverson are the two greatest offensive players in our era of watching basketball that are going to be rewarded in the Hall of Fame for doing so.
Yeah.
I mean, Robert Ori was never known as an offensive player. Robert Ori was never known as the best defensive player. Robert Ori's known as having more rings than most.
Yeah, he was a role player that could come in he could come through with a clutch three-pointer. He understood how to blend in well. He wasn't the best defender, like you mentioned, but at least you could utilize him for particular. Like, he kind of knew his role, and I think it helped.
Agreed. But again, is that Hall of Fame worthy?
No, okay. I don't. I'm with you. I don't believe Robert
on the Hall
Robert
of Fame subject. Someone says Jason Witten going to the Hall of Fame due to longevity.
Sure.
Sure. But he's also been all pro plenty of times.
Yeah, he's got numbers.
Right, he's got the numbers to back it up, not just because of longevity, but because individual seasons, because their argument is because of longevity. Individual seasons, he's been the best tight end in football, or one of them, to obtain not only all-pro status, but also Pro Bowl status. So you can't take that from him. Therefore, with those stacking up, that's warranted, right? But in terms of longevity, I'll throw another name out in a different sport, and I'll tell you that they have a point, and that's Vince Carter. Vince Carter... aside from being one of the best dunkers, if not the best dunker of all time, Vince Carter has a chance to go to the Hall of Fame simply because he's played 20-some-odd years in the NBA, and at a certain point, your numbers get to be comparable to those that are the best that ever played the game. However, when you do it by averages of how many years those other people played compared to him, that's how he got there.
His longevity is amazing, especially when you consider the flashy nature of his game, the dunks and the penetrations to the basket, where he would have an enormous amount of contact. And to be able to play since the 1998-1999 season and still is playing today is absolutely unbelievable.
Kudos to him for having the longevity and the health, but does that mean you're a Hall of Famer? Because you're being rewarded for staying healthy and playing the longest?
Yeah, because he hasn't averaged more than 10 points a game since the 2014-2015 season. So he's had 5 years, 5 full seasons of him not breaking 10 points, let alone 8 points. He's never averaged more than 8 points. And now he's on his sixth season where he's probably going to, average less than 10 points. But you know what you get out of Vince Carter. Teams are very specific about his role. He kind of accepts it. We all know he's a voice. He's a leader. He can help some of these young guys on some of these rosters.
Look, he's just collecting. Witten's just collecting a check now, but he's basically had the numbers to. And I know AJ and Fred had this discussion at one point. I believe AJ didn't think that Witten was a Hall of Famer, but when you look at the numbers, to me, I think it's a no-brainer. I think he's in. I just think that.
Well, I always like to clarify and say, is he a Hall of Famer, or do you think? Because there's guys that I don't think are Hall of Famers, but they probably would get in. You know what I mean?
I don't think there's any question in my mind that Jason Witten's going to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, he's getting in. Yeah. Even if you don't think he's getting in, he's getting in. Sorry. He's just getting
Shannon
in.
Shannon Sharpe, by the way, Skip, I'm here to tell you. I not only won a Super Bowl with the Ravens, Skip, I won with the Broncos, too. I got 3 Super Bowls, Skip. So because of that and the statistics, Shannon Sharpe, slam dunk to me, maybe the best tight end of all time.
Can't ignore that.
So thanks to you peeps for texting that in as well. Thanks to you, Nicholas. We appreciate you always stepping in for Barry, and you're my go-to guy.
Thank you,
as
sir.
We take this show to the brink of just absolute fantasticness. Tyler, thank you to you as well. As tomorrow, it's a different show, a different time. We'll be filling in for the Blitz. It'll be Raheel in for Barry and Nick. It'll be Aaron doing his normal job. It'll be me, myself, and I as we take you in a different time slot for the Blitz tomorrow at I-10 in Kirkwood, Twin Peaks. Stop by and see us there. Palillo's going to do our show from 1 to 4. Blitz is going to do 11 to 1. And then Friday, back time, same bat channel. Josh Jordan fills in as we finish out the week. So we appreciate you, suspects. Have a great day. Have a great night. Enjoy the Blitz. And we'll talk to you again tomorrow at 4 o'clock right here on ESPN 97.5.